This Morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Ukraine holds Kiev. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Monday, February 28th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
As the Russian invasion of Ukraine unfolds on a fifth day, the two sides are planning to speak. Meanwhile, Ukraine forces have so far repelled an attack on its capital.
President Biden is asking for more than $6 billion in aid for Ukraine.
New York City and Chicago are lifting mask mandates and other pandemic restrictions.
And regarding the Russian assault on Ukraine, farewell to the security architecture that's prevailed since the end of the Cold War.
That's all been shattered now. And what happens in Europe specifically, nobody really knows. And that depends in part on exactly what Vladimir Putin tries to arrange in Ukraine and whether the West has the ability to stop him from going further.
Jerry Seib at the Wall Street Journal on how Russia's invasion will change the world. Russia and Ukraine are preparing for talks today for the first time since Russia's invasion began 5 days ago. Reports say Ukraine's defenders have held on to the capital of Kiev. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered the country's nuclear deterrence forces to be put on alert. Reaction from Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations.
This is another escalatory and unnecessary step that threatens us all. We urge Russia to tone down its dangerous rhetoric regarding nuclear weapons.
European Union member countries will supply Ukraine with jet fighters meanwhile, and the EU and Canada plan to bar Russian planes from entering their airspace. On the finance front, the Russian ruble plunged nearly 30% after Western nations blocked some Russian banks from the SWIFT international payment system. The UN, by the way, says nearly 400,000 civilians, mainly women and children, have fled into neighboring countries. The Biden administration will ask Congress for $6.4 billion in economic and military aid to help Ukraine as it fights the Russian invasion. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the request would be added to a spending bill expected to reach the Senate floor next week.
Democrats are going to work with Republicans to put this aid in the package. It's $6.4 billion is exactly what the administration requested.
Meanwhile, the two major bodies of the United Nations, the 193-nation General Assembly and the more powerful 15-member Security Council, will hold separate meetings today on Russia's invasion. The Security Council gave a green light yesterday for the first emergency session of the General Assembly in decades. Both meetings follow Russia's veto Friday of a Security Council resolution demanding that Moscow immediately stop its attack on Ukraine and withdraw all troops. The vote was 11-1, with China, India, and the United Arab Emirates abstaining. As you might imagine, Russia's invasion of Ukraine is piling new troubles onto the world's already battered supply chains. The fighting has shut down car factories in Germany that rely on components made in Ukraine and hit supplies for the steel industry as far as Japan. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The Wall Street Journal says the conflict is also bottling up vast commodity exports from Ukraine and Russia, setting the price of oil, natural gas, wheat, and sunflower oil skyrocketing. Shipping from Ukrainian ports, an important corridor for grain, metal, and Russian oil shipments to the rest of the world, has all but ceased. Freighters and airlines have warned that the decision by many European nations to close their airspace to Russia will increase the cost of flying cargo from Europe to Asia, potentially making some routes unviable. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. The Journal says economists and business leaders fear hits to the supply chains that rely on components and little-known commodities from Russia, such as neon gas and palladium, which are important ingredients to make semiconductors. They worry about those. Industries such as car manufacturing have already been disrupted, as you know, by a surge in demand after the easing of pandemic lockdowns and persistent production bottlenecks. It's 11 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, how Russia's invasion will change the world.
We all have a lot going on. The last thing we need is to spend too much energy choosing what to wear. But if you have a closet full of Cuts clothing, it's easy. Throw on anything and you'll look good. How do they do it? Every Cuts shirt is designed for a modern, tailored fit. They're insanely comfortable. I can't believe how soft their shirts feel. Between the fabric and the fit, they're the most comfortable shirts I've ever worn. Plus, Cuts has all the essentials for looking sharp, like tees, hoodies, polos, and more. And they reinvented them all, from how they're cut to the revolutionary fabrics they use. They won't shrink, pill, or fade over time in the wash. Mine still look and feel great. Try them for yourself and save. Join hundreds of thousands of guys who've made the simple decision to elevate their wardrobe with Cuts. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's C-U-T-S, cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
Blocking out the noise and bringing you the facts. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. Russia's invasion of Ukraine won't merely affect the world, it will change the world. By moving further into a sovereign state to bring it under his thumb, Russian President Vladimir Putin has shattered the security architecture that has prevailed in Europe since the end of the Cold War. And Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal, says no one knows what will take its place.
We don't. And the one thing we do know is that it's been shattered. I mean, there was a kind of equilibrium that had settled in after the Cold War in Europe. And that equilibrium had some expansion of Western influence, but also left Russia, I think everybody would agree, secure in its own borders. And everybody kind of happy, almost complacent. Well, that's all been shattered now. And what happens in Europe specifically, nobody really knows. And that depends in part on exactly what Vladimir Putin tries to arrange in Ukraine and whether the West has the ability to stop him from going further.
All right. So as you point out in the story, too, you said Mr. Putin is not counting on unity by some of the Western nations or NATO, which could be a big miscalculation.
Right. And that's the potential here for a strategic blunder by Vladimir Putin. I think he assumed that in part because Europe has increasingly become dependent over the last decade or two on Russian energy, particularly natural gas, but also oil. And because there's interdependence economically more broadly now, a lot of financial transactions between European banks and Russia, for example.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Russia's Strike Changes Not Just Ukraine, but the World. How do you see Germany in all this? Because as you point out, they seem somewhat ambivalent at times.
They have been ambivalent. They never, for example, explicitly said they would stop the so-called Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, a very big new pipeline from Russia to Western Europe that goes through Germany that was going to open shortly, but the Germans, upon the event of the invasion, in fact, said that's not going to open. They've turned that operation off, at least temporarily. And so they've been pretty tough on that front. And their rhetoric at the UN, for example, has been pretty tough as well.
I've seen it raised that this conflict may push Russia closer to China. I mean, what does that even mean?
Well, it means a couple of things. In the short term, it means that perhaps the Chinese will give Russia relief from the sanctions that have already been imposed. The Chinese can buy lots of Russian oil, for example. They can provide high-tech equipment and know-how that is being cut off from the Russians by the West at this point. They may even be able to provide some financing for Russia that the Kremlin will want in the wake of bank sanctions on the West. In the long run, it could mean that the two countries, Russia and China, get together to try to construct a kind of parallel international financial system separate from the dollar-denominated, American-dominated one that exists now.
How does North Korea play this? Are they going to start doing things to demand attention?
Well, there's two possibilities. One is that they do things to demand attention because nobody's paying attention to them, and clearly Kim Jong-un doesn't like that. There's also the possibility that they may think everybody is so distracted,
yeah,
so they can make some leaps forward in their own nuclear weapons and missile programs, and everybody will be too busy dealing with the crisis in Russia to really confront them about that. They may decide to just stand down as well, of course, but I think there is a risk here that North Korea and some other bad actors around the world may choose that a time of international distraction is a good time to go make hay someplace and think you'll get away with it.
And then finish up, if you would, with the whole angle of Iran here and oil.
Yeah, I think this is fascinating. You know, the Biden administration has been trying to revive the nuclear deal with Iran that President Trump threw out. Those talks, had, after going badly for a lot of 2021, had started in recent months to make progress. And this was separate from and before the real Ukraine crisis unfolded. But I think the negotiators thought they were maybe on track already to get a deal done, which would reimpose some limits on Iran's nuclear program, but also then open the way for more Iranian oil exports on world markets.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, Executive Washington Editor at The Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Ukrainian delegation is meeting with Russian officials near the Belarus border. The talks come about a day after Russian troops entered Ukraine's second largest city. President Biden is also scheduled to hold a call with U.S. allies this morning to discuss their coordinated response to the situation in Ukraine.
Number two.
Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered Russian nuclear forces to be on high alert, a response to what he called aggressive statements by leading NATO powers and economic sanctions by the West. In Washington, Ukraine's ambassador to the U.S., Oksana Markarova, addressed a rally of Ukraine supporters.
Our general prosecutor is working day and night to collect all the evidence, to record all the evidence of all the crimes, war crimes, that Russian armed forces are committing in Ukraine as we speak.
Ukrainian officials say the civilian death toll has reached more than 350.
Number three.
Sanctions against Russian officials and entities continue to pile up as anti-war protests break out across the globe. The Central Bank of Russia announced today it would raise its key interest rate to 20% from 9.5% as the ruble hit a record low against the dollar. The ruble is down a whopping 30% from Friday's close. FIFA is drawing backlash from European nations for not immediately expelling Russia from World Cup qualifying and only ordering the country to play without its flag and anthem at neutral venues. Protesting against FIFA's response, Poland said it would still refuse to play the country in a World Cup playoff semifinal scheduled for March 24th. Major League Baseball negotiations to end the lockout are extending to the limit. Management says a deal must be reached by the end of today's negotiations to salvage a March 31st start to the regular season and a 162-game schedule. With that in mind, the sides are scheduled to meet starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 hours earlier than usual. This will be the eighth straight day of talks. You might think a large country like the U.S. is the most visited in the world, but France is actually number one. About 90 million international visitors traveled there in 2019. Travel experts say visitors are drawn to France for its cuisine, culture, the beauty of the country, and the romance they feel there. Spain ranks number two for tourists, followed by the U.S.
We are not drawn to France, apparently, by the friendliness of its people.
Ooh, ouch.
Yes.
Ouch.
Personal experience. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. But to cruise through challenges, you need someone who's right there with you. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice you need to get past whatever's in front of you and get where you want to go. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
Thanks for being with us. New bank account data show most Americans are significantly better off financially now than they were before the pandemic began. But there are signs that low-income families are beginning to fall behind. Andrew Van Dam, staff writer at the Washington Post, has been looking at the numbers. Andrew, what have you found?
Well, yeah, serious numbers. The JPMorgan Chase Institute crunched anonymous data for 7.5 million families. So we have bank account data with great detail on income and everything else. And what we found is that just about everybody is much better off now than they were before the pandemic began. And for at least higher income families, the situation isn't deteriorating. They're actually adding to their bank account, you know, despite stimulus running out, despite inflation concerns and everything else, their savings are rising. There is one small caveat, though, which is that the lowest income families, those earning less than $26,000, they are seeing that bank account balance start to slip a little bit now.
And do we blame inflation on that, or what's behind that? Do we know?
That's part of it. Their purchasing power is eroding, and their expenses are rising. Rent inflation, in particular, has taken a big chunk out of the bank accounts of a lot of folks I've talked to. And the point that they make is, yes, low-income folks may have an average of $1,300 in their bank account now, versus maybe $800, $900 before the crisis, but their rent may also be $1,400 now compared to $900 before the crisis.
Well, it's a shocking stat, too, in your story. It's, what is it, $2.6 trillion in extra savings that so many people have? Are we going to spend that?
Some of it will inevitably be spent, but the timing on that is really tough to tell. I was talking to a New York Fed economist, and they said, yeah, we still don't believe that that $2.6 trillion in money on the sidelines is going to start dropping rapidly anytime soon. There's still spending opportunities are somewhat limited, and folks have some still have some steady reasons to save. I'm talking about things like uncertainty.
So with regards to the spending, too, as you point out in the story, a spending spree, a huge one of those $1 trillion in savings, comes with risks, too, correct?
Absolutely. And businesses are thinking that they're going to see a bit of a spending spree coming up here as coronavirus restrictions ease, mask mandates ease, and the Omicron wave subsides. But if that happens, that is going to put even more pressure on supply chains. That is going to put even more pressure on the demand for service workers. And so that could drive up prices yet again for goods and services.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Van Dam, staff writer at the Washington Post. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
The news without the nonsense. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, February 28. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Ukraine's president today asked the European Union for immediate membership under a special procedure. Russian and Ukrainian delegations meet for talks at the border with Belarus. New York City and Chicago lifting some pandemic restrictions. Supreme Court hears a case today that could limit the EPA's power. Baseball and the Players Union are still trying to save the start of the regular season. And what happened when a father from Ukraine handed his children to a stranger at the Hungary border? That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by Indeed. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Just sponsor a post and receive a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description. Visit Indeed.com/credit. A key ingredient in bread, cereal, and baked goods is facing the prospect of supply disruptions as Russia invades Ukraine. In-depth analysis from Nathan Bomey, co-author of a newsletter at Axios called Closer. Nathan, set this up.
Yeah, you know, Ukraine is historically known as the breadbasket of Europe. And, you know, Russia is also a big supplier of wheat. So this is, you know, this invasion puts the wheat supplies of Eastern Europe there into, you know, a pretty risky situation because the world is already actually has a pretty stressed supply of wheat because of weather conditions over the last few years in the Northern Hemisphere. There's been price increases. There's been supply challenges. And so with, you know, this conflict reaching a peak at this point, I think there are concerns that wheat supplies could end up having even further issues.
Mm. All right, so I'm not necessarily the most educated person when it comes to ingredients of food, but you referenced wheat. I think cereal. I know you spoke with the likes of General Mills or Kellogg. What are they saying on this front?
Yeah, General Mills actually warned that they're facing acute supply challenges for things like refrigerated dough. And, so I think, General Mills, of course, makes Wheaties. They make Cheerios. They make all these products that where wheat is a key component. And so, I think that we have to watch closely to see if there are any further challenges to the wheat supply chain that could have a ripple effect through food prices and food availability. Kellogg also recently warned that wheat prices have caused food inflation there. We know food inflation already a problem for Americans, well over 7% in recent months, and of course record inflation across the board. And so if wheat continues to increase in price, which I suspect it will as a result of this invasion, then that could put additional upward pressure on overall food prices.
Excuse me, we're speaking with Nathan Bomey. He is the co-author of Axios Closer. He's written a piece called Russia's Invasion of Ukraine Puts Wheat Supplies at Risk. So I was too young at the time to pay attention to what was happening in the late 70s, early 80s with inflation, but we're just not used to this.
Yeah.
In terms of where prices are going for even some of these basic commodities, like now what happens?
Yeah, it is really interesting because with inflation at a 40-year high, you're right, we haven't seen this since the early 80s. It is a little different this time around because I think last time it was almost exclusively because of energy, and now it's energy is one factor, but it's there are other factors too. For example, the used car prices, which have skyrocketed, and then of course, like we already mentioned, food prices, and there's other elements of the economy where prices have spiked as well. And obviously, this stems from the pandemic, which disrupted the supply chain for so many different items for various reasons. Labor shortages being one. I mean, that's a big reason why we face inflation, because if you don't have enough people to make goods, then you maybe can't make enough goods. And then if you can't make enough, then there isn't enough supply. When there's not enough supply, then the price goes up. So, that's how the ripple effect happens. And I think a lot of people feel like inflation won't significantly die down until the pandemic really dies down. Now, we are seeing some encouraging signs on the pandemic, of course. And I think that that may lead to a rebalancing of the economy, because people have spent so much money on physical items in the last couple of years that they would have otherwise spent on things like a cruise, for example. So once people start to spend on services again, then that'll probably ease, demand will ease up again, and that'll probably allow the supply chain to rebalance.
Okay, so you put it out in your story too that Ukraine wheat exports actually are holding steady at this point. What do we glean from that?
Yeah, in the weeks leading up to this, they have been steady, but I suspect that that won't continue. I think one of the big questions is whether any of the sanctions that are going to rain down on Russia end up affecting Ukrainian wheat exports here, or Russian wheat exports, which are also key. Will any of that actually affect the supply? And then will Vladimir Putin take any action to disrupt that supply chain as well?
Thanks, Nathan. Nathan Bomey, co-author of a newsletter at Axios called Closer. Hey, boomers. That's right. I'm calling out to you boomers in the audience and some of the older Gen Xers, myself included. Why? Because I recently read a report that said some of us may invest too much in stocks, which is why I was excited to learn about this so-called boomer asset that's giving Gen Z a run for their money. People have been investing in it longer than some of us have been around. I'm talking about contemporary art. Problem was, it used to be inaccessible for most of us until now. Masterworks gives everyone the opportunity to invest in blue chip artwork. They can help you build a portfolio of contemporary art, which has shown past price appreciation that's outpaced the S&P 500 for the last 25 years. Now, my listeners can receive exclusive access to their latest offerings at masterworks.art/Gordon. That's masterworks.art/Gordon. Before deciding to invest, carefully review the important disclosures at masterworks.art/Gordon. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. What is holding up the return to the office right now? Plenty of workers simply don't feel like it. They're dining at restaurants, though, going to movies and taking trips, but offices are not on their itinerary. Callum Borchers, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, says that is delivering a reality check for bosses. Callum, how do you see it?
Well, I think what's happened is there's been this shift, right, from workers who either couldn't go back to work because the offices were closed because of pandemic restrictions, or maybe they were really fearful of catching the virus or bringing it home to loved ones. That's still true in some cases, but what we're finding is that more and more, Gordon, workers are staying home just because they like it, and it's hard for bosses to lure them back, even with great perks. I loved the example of this really awesome sounding office in Chicago that I found. It's this sports marketing firm, and they've got a race car and a scoreboard and bleachers, this whole sports theme. And as if that's not enough, they've got this office bar stocked with free beer and bourbon. I mean, what's not to love?
Yeah.
And even they can't get their workers to come back 5 days a week. Most people still prefer to be home most of the time.
That's incredible. So I know you spoke to the operator, the owner, the founder of that John Rawati. What did he say about this? I mean, he's got this tremendous office, and folks are just like, nah, I'll stay home.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying to keep a good attitude about it. And I think like a lot of executives, he's hopeful that more folks will trickle back in as time goes on. Maybe the weather will get better. People will have those very young children under 5 vaccinated, that sort of thing. But still, he's frustrated. I mean, and he told me that. He said, you know, it's really frustrating to really do everything that you can think of, you know, and try to be a very understanding boss. Don't be overbearing. Because remember, some companies have issued mandates and said, well, you have to be back in your seats. He, like a lot of CEOs, are trying to be a little bit more understanding and make the workplace optional. But what they were hoping, Gordon, was that they had such a magnetic company culture or such a cool office that folks would come back voluntarily. And they're getting this reality check right now that folks are saying, well, actually, you know, we're in like, but not love with you and your office.
Wow. We're speaking with Callum Borchers, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. His story is called Sorry Bosses, Workers Are Just Not That Into You. Something that came up in your piece that you mentioned was that there seems to be, at least according to one employer, like a lack of loyalty.
Yeah, this is another point of frustration, right? Because, you know, times were tough. It's easy to forget just how, you know, severe and how fast the recession was in 2020 when so many businesses were locked down. And of course, many of those businesses then got PPP loans from the federal government and allowed them to keep people on staff instead of laying them off. Many people did lose their jobs. But you're talking about this company called APS. It's a payroll software company in Shreveport, Louisiana, and their president Aaron Johnson said to me, you know, it stings because you know these are workers that we hired and trained. You know, we stood by them, we kept them through the darkest times of the recession. We didn't lay anybody off. And now, as we come out on the other end, and we're in the middle of an economic recovery, we're calling people back to the office at least 3 days a week. They're still in a hybrid format. And yet, he says he lost 30% of the staff last year.
Jeez.
And he's losing them to remote jobs in mostly, he says, California, Texas, New York, and you just can't compete on salary. You know, the cost of living is lower in Louisiana. And so for these folks, even if they don't get, you know, full-blown Silicon Valley money, if they get somewhere in between, they can get a raise and then stay in lower-cost Louisiana and basically live large.
Thanks, Callum. Callum Borchers, columnist at The Wall Street Journal.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you. And to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the Windows PCs and tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. A start to a simpler experience with Windows 11 Pro.
The information you need and the truth you demand. Start your day with America's First News. This morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Russian-made alcohol is the latest target in the growing backlash against the country's invasion of Ukraine. So far, officials in Ohio, Utah, and New Hampshire have called on liquor stores to remove Russian-made or Russian-branded products from shelves, a move that largely targets vodka, since it's mostly closely associated with that country. These moves, though, are largely symbolic. Many of the top-selling vodka brands that trace their origins to Russia are now distilled in multiple countries, including the U.S. For example, CNN says some bar owners are protesting the invasion by dumping out Stoli vodka. Problem is, it's only Russian by name. The vodka is actually made in Latvia, and the company's headquarters is in Luxembourg, a member of NATO, which has spoken against the Russian invasion. Smirnoff is another brand being confused as being Russian, although it traces its heritage to 19th century Russia. The company has long been owned by the UK company Diageo and is manufactured in Illinois. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
5 days into Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the smaller country's defenders continue to frustrate Russian attempts on its major cities. The UK defense minister says Russian forces are continuing to advance into Ukraine from multiple axes but are being met with stiff resistance from Ukrainian armed forces. Ukraine remains in control of Kiev and its second biggest city despite heavy fighting.
Number two.
Europe and the U.S. are displaying unified opposition to Vladimir Putin's designs on Ukraine, announcing economic sanctions and weapons shipments. A growing number of countries announced yesterday they're joining a string of nations in closing their airspace to Russian aircraft. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen says the EU will shut down its airspace for planes owned, registered, or controlled by Russians.
Let me be very clear. Our airspace will be closed to every Russian plane. And that includes the private jets of oligarchs, too.
Canada is also closing its airspace to all Russian planes.
Number three.
The scope of federal power to reduce greenhouse gas emissions comes before the Supreme Court today as a coalition of Republican-led states seeks to limit measures the EPA can impose on power plants. The High Court's decision to hear the case comes as its conservative majority found that the administration exceeded its authority in several policies aimed at combating the pandemic. New York City Mayor Eric Adams says a dramatic drop in coronavirus infections could lead to the lifting of vaccine mandates on restaurants, bars, and theaters as soon as next week. His announcement came shortly after Governor Kathy Hochul announced plans to lift the state's mask mandate on schools effective Wednesday.
We will not stand for any bullying or ostracization or harassment of an individual or a business or anyone who chooses to wear a mask as we're still going through this.
Adams promised a decision on school masks by Friday. Your go-to password might be easier to guess than you think. A new report from mobile security firm Lookout lists 20 passwords most commonly found in leaked account information, led by simple number sequences such as 123456 and easily remembered phrases such as I love you. Other passwords to avoid include the word password and 111111. It's a timely concern, with cybersecurity experts saying the current Russia-Ukraine conflict could result in an uptick in cyber attacks around the world.
Bet I could find you doing that story 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Right, about avoiding those types of
passwords. I can't believe people still do this.
Right? Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you're with us. A stranger helped two Ukrainian kids separated from their father at the border with Hungary to reunite with their mom. The desperate dad, one of many Ukrainian men who are forbidden to leave the country, handed his two young children to a woman he did not know when he was stopped by border guards. Fortunately, there was a happy ending. The children's mother, en route from Italy, arrived and was reunited with them. An Irish news site says 58-year-old Natalia Ablieva was at the border crossing when she saw a man from her hometown with his young son and daughter. Guards refused to let him pass. She said their father simply handed over the two kids to her. He gave Ms. Ablieva the mobile phone number of their mother, who said she was en route to get them. Then he said goodbye to his kids. Ms. Ablieva took the two kids and they crossed the border. They waited on the Hungarian side until the mom got there, leading to a happy reunion. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.